Hello there. Welcome
Blog
to another
Talk Radio.
Hello there. Welcome to another edition of the Red Zone Blitz. This is Brandon. I'm filling in for the Frat House Mike at the moment. He's joining us shortly. We're having a bit of a technical issue this morning with this evening with Blog Talk Radio, but we're getting ready to run down the action from Week 15. If you guys out there want to talk NFL from last week, want to talk about potential playoff matchups, anything that's on your mind regarding the previous week in the NFL, give us a call at 347-826-9964. That's their cell phone or landline. If you're listening to us via the computer and you have your Skype capable, at the top of the little player in the window, there's a little Skype button. If you click that directly, you can join the show like you're sitting right next to us. By clicking the Skype button, you'll Skype into Blog Talk and we'll bring you on the air just like any other guest would be. So we're getting ready, and what we're going to do this week is we're going to run down a lot of the games that had some potential playoff implication last week. Once we get them going, we're going to also talk about some upcoming matchups that all have playoff implications in this week 16. With only 2 weeks to go in the NFL season, we got quite a bit to talk about. I believe Frat House Mike has joined me.
I think I got in finally. Yes.
There we go.
I'm waiting.
I've never done this before from the hosting chair, so I had to wing it a little bit there.
Well, you know, listen, it's called a baptism of fire. Listen, if it's on BTR, you can imagine it's going to be a baptism of fire. I still don't know what's going on here because I can't get the chat room open or anything.
I have the chat open. The chat room looks like it's open. I have it running.
Yep.
We're open.
Yep, I'm in the main switchboard area, but I couldn't get in as a host tonight, and I cannot get to the chat room. So if there's any chats that come up there, Brandon, you just be on the lookout for them and let us know.
You got it.
Let's see. Where am I going here? Well, listen, I didn't hear anything of what you said, but that's all right. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time, and here's what we know. We've got – it's not extra games this week. We've got games just at a different time schedule. We've got two games on Saturday. So the season of giving is upon us here in the NFL, as we're going to get a game on Thursday night, if you call that thing on Thursday a game. We're going to get a game on Thursday night. We're going to get two games on Saturday. We're going to get our usual bevy of games on Sunday, and then we come back on Monday night. So we got lots of great stuff coming up right before the Christmas holiday here. Very, very nice. Very nice. Let's see. Okay, now my chat room's working. There you go. All right, but as you pointed out, I think you probably said, we've got a lot of games here that playoff implications, playoff things happening that potentially are going to – listen, we're going to touch on a bunch of them. What do you say we started off with the
Arizona Cardinals and the Rams?
Did we mention to everybody how they can get a hold of us? Because that's what we really want. Okay,
I did run down the numbers and the Skype button, and I told them that, you know, we're going to be talking about, you know, the Week 15 action, and then we're going to discuss, you know, who clinched and, you know, some possible playoff scenarios as we go. If they had any questions, to give us a call.
There you go. 347-826-9964. All right, please. That's why we're on here doing this, so that we can hear from you folks out there. And we're not going to bite your head off. We want to hear from people and see what they think on some things. What do people think about this Arizona Cardinals team? You know, away on the road last week, Brandon, to St. Louis. Oh, boy. Just managed to get away with their 11th win of the season winning that one 12-6 makes them right now the number one seed in the NFC. Still in firm control of the NFC West. I think it, my guess would be, regardless of what's happening right now, Cardinals, my guess would be that that's probably going to stay that way, I would think.
Well,
but,
here's what happened. They clinched a playoff berth, and they're playing Seattle, which essentially is going to be for the division this week. That's the long and short of it. If the Cardinals win, they got the division locked up. If Seattle wins, then it goes to the last week, but I believe it would give Seattle all the tiebreakers since Seattle would own two victories over Arizona in division. So there's a big game this week coming up for them.
There is no doubt about it. And they've got the double-edged sword now of having lost their second quarterback. Drew Stanton went down. They went to Lindley on the backside after Stanton went down with that one. But the talk is they're not sure. I think at least you, again, I kind of defer to you to see whether you know any more up-to-date information or not. While Lindley would seem the obvious choice to be starting, apparently they were looking at Case Keenum.
Case Keenum went to
that's the Texans.
They have another guy named Logan. His last name skipped in my brain at the moment. He's a rookie they drafted this year. They did look at him a little bit earlier, and you know, I guess they didn't. They don't feel he's ready or seasoned enough to take the team through the playoffs. So you know, that's why they went to, you know, they're going to go Lindley. However, they did say they may have a package where you could see both quarterbacks. So I think what they're trying to do, and it's just my opinion, they're trying to keep the teams, you know, on guard, make them prepare for both.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was. Because
Logan Thomas is who I'm referring to. He was drafted out of Virginia Tech this year. So I don't think he's quite seasoned enough for the playoff run. That's probably why they're going with a guy who has a little bit more experience, not a ton more, but, you know, just a hair.
Yeah, I mean, when you had mentioned that the other evening, that there was a possibility they would go with the tandem quarterback thing. You know, we've seen it tried in the NFL spottily, you know, a game or two or three here or there with a particular team that thinks, oh, this will be innovative, this will be cool, and it never seems to work out. You know, it just never, you never get you lose the feel, and I think that's what happens. You know, the offensive line gets a different feel. I mean, the whole thing, I think it just, I don't know. I would agree with you that if they're putting that out there, that's probably more of a trial balloon just to keep competitors that they're playing off, you know, on their toes. And who did you say they're playing this week? Is it Seattle?
Oh, yeah, it's Seattle. I mean, this is for all the marbles. They're going into this without a net. You know, they you know, Stanton, they said, has, you know, what they call it, the MCL grade 2 sprain, which is generally, you know, a 4-week injury. But, you know, it's playoff time. So, as they say, it's time to suck it up. It's time to play football. Now, being 1 week removed, I doubt that, you know, he's ready to go this week. He's probably would play, you know, not – his play probably wouldn't be good enough to warrant him being on the field. They're probably better off rolling the dice with Lindley and Logan Thomas. Now, okay, I'm not saying that's – I'm sure it's not Bruce Arians, you know, idea, you know what I mean, or dream to have a rotating quarterback. This is a necessity is basically what this is coming down to. You know, they don't have a choice. They got to do something. You know, they're, as you just pointed out, 11-3. They're the number one seed in the NFC conference right now. You know, with the Eagles losing to Dallas, you know, Dallas is breathing down their neck. Green Bay lost. So, you know, it almost puts Arizona in a position of, you know, control if they can somehow pull this victory out, you know.
Right.
So
early,
yeah.
Early line on that game, Seattle is an 8-point favorite on the road in Arizona. Interestingly, the over-under on that is the lowest on the board at 36.5. So nobody's expecting this to be a high-scoring game.
No, I wouldn't expect it to be either. And I'll be honest with you, 8-point line, I would take the Cardinals all day long. Their defense has kept them in games, you know, as they've been struggling through, you know, issues on offense. I mean, let's look at the last few weeks. I mean, they lost Carson Palmer to a season-ending ACL. now Stanton's gone. They've been dealing with their number one primary running back is on injured reserve with, you know, sports hernia, done for the year, Andre Ellington. Larry Fitzgerald's missed a few games with injuries here and there. And this team's still 11-3. I don't think anybody can just say, okay, well, Seattle's going to blow their doors off. I just don't see it happening. They've managed to persevere through injury after injury. I see the game being close. And as we've seen and talked about repeatedly, division games are always close. I don't see any reason this should be any different.
Right.
Do you see it as a Seattle blowout?
No, I don't. I don't see it as a Seattle blowout. And one of the questions I was just going to throw out there is, you know, and we've kind of jokingly said this around here, you can make all the analogies you want right now to Arizona. You can make the Cinderella analogy, you know, has the glass slipper broken? You can make the cat and the nine lives scenario. How many more lives are they possibly going to have? The funny thing is Arizona keeps seemingly finding just ways of getting by. And sometimes they do, well, no, I'll take it back. I think most of the times recently they've been doing it rather ugly. I might agree with you. I think you might have to favor Seattle a tad bit game. But
yeah.
I don't know. I agree with you. I think against the line, you might consider playing Arizona. And again, Seattle, as we already know, is not an offensive juggernaut. That's not a tremendously offensive team. And if Arizona is just barely finding ways of eking games out ugly against a team that, yeah, defensively, Seattle, number one defense, I think, still right now in the league, anticipate Arizona's going to have a little bit of trouble there. This could come down to being a field goal fest.
Well, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, though, the Arizona Cardinals had kind of faced this adversity before. If you remember, I don't know if you remember, but it was a few weeks ago when Carson Palmer went down. We were watching a game, and I forget who the opponent was, but they were. It was a lackluster game. It was real tight, real close. You know, Carson Palmer goes down with an injury, and you think, oh, no, here we go. And all of a sudden, their defense steps up. Patrick Peterson came up with two interceptions. One, he ran back for a touchdown. So the team has that kind of grit that, you know, you could see the Arizona defense just say, okay, we got to put this game on our back this week. You know, we got to score some points. We got to, you know, help the offense because they're down, you know, to their, you know, third or fourth, depending which way you want to look at it, option of quarterback. I mean, because I believe Logan Thomas saw some time in a game earlier this year when Stanton was filling in for Carson Palmer, who was hurt the first time, and Stanton went down with an injury, you know, in a game. So they've had quite a few number of signal callers in Arizona, and they're still 11-3.
Yep.
So,
I think by virtue of that, you have to sit up straight. You can't just immediately dismiss this Arizona team. But at the same time, like I said, I think you probably logically going into the game, you have to think, well, I think I might have to give a little bit of the edge here to Seattle simply because, you know, there's going to be such transitioning going on, I would suspect, in the offensive game plan.
The only thing I have a problem with was the number of points. 8 points just seems to me to be absolutely ludicrous. I don't know if you have, or maybe you do know, I don't know. What did it open at a lower number and go up? Or did it open that high as far as a line? Like, lines makers set the line at?
Yeah, I know. And I see Uncle Mark's in the chat room, and he might actually be able to answer that question because I have a – it's a weird thing, but I have a tradition. I don't ever look at the line before Tuesday.
Oh,
so I did not look at the line. I did not even look at the line, say, late Sunday night or even early Monday morning, because my thinking is I want to wait until all the games are concluded, because frequently a Monday night outcome can affect lines. So I don't ever look at them until Tuesday. So I'm looking at it today for the first time. But Uncle Mark, what does Uncle Mark have it down there?
So he put in there 7.5 is what it opened at.
So it is actually moving in Seattle's favor.
Well, yeah, it's people betting, and it's people who – bettors who are essentially doing what
putting
we're saying.
Putting money on Seattle, yep.
They're writing off Arizona, saying, oh, well, there's no way they can overcome this. And, you know, just because the games are ugly, they still find a way to win. So I'm not too ready to write them off yet. I agree I feel bad for them because they're in a real bad spot. They have the best record in a conference. They should be in the driver's seat, and they're down so many players this year. It's a shame that, you know, if Seattle does win, as you know, I would, if I had to pick the game heads up, I would say Seattle's probably going to win the game only because they're playing. But I think it's going to be, you know, they're playing well, but I think it's going to be a closer game. And it's a shame because Arizona's earned it this year the hard way. And
no, that's
they're
going
to
sure.
have to go in as a wild card, you know, go on the road. Maybe they'll get the lucky draw and have to go play the NFC South team. You know, if they go get that draw and have to play the NFC South team, then maybe, you know, they'd have to be the 5 seed because the NFC South team will be the 4. 4 plays 5, 6 plays 3. So the last wild card will go to the whoever's the 3 seed. So maybe they can get lucky and win a game that way by, you know, beating on New Orleans or Atlanta, whichever one of them, or Carolina, whoever perseveres to, you know, survive that division to be the champion.
You brought up Atlanta. Let's take a look at Atlanta real quick. Atlanta sure. was over at, or actually was hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers this past weekend. We've talked about, you know, again, I'm coming back to the Steelers. We've talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers all season long. Not just here on the Race Trim Motorsport or on the Red Zone Blitz program, but over on our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show on Thursday. Here comes Pittsburgh, still that half game behind Cincinnati, with Cincinnati having to play Denver this week. Pittsburgh, to me, as I have stated numerous times, looking more and more and more like the team to beat in the AFC North. Now, in the game against Atlanta, this is another one of those kinds of strange games. Well, again, here we go. It's the NFC South. Nobody seems to want this. New Orleans actually, I think, probably did the best job of any of the teams over there this past weekend. But Atlanta really didn't play Pittsburgh that poorly. That is until, well, I guess, you know, Pittsburgh had the early lead. They were up 13-0, but then Atlanta came back with a touchdown in late into the second quarter and then two field goals in the third quarter, and the game was only down by 7. And that's pretty much where it stayed. 27-20, Pittsburgh won this game. Ben Roethlisberger had himself 109.2 QB rating, Brandon, without having thrown any touchdowns and no interceptions whatsoever. 109.2, pretty darn good. It was really the defense. And, you know, you and I have talked about this Pittsburgh defense that has kind of been lacking a little bit this year. We haven't seen quite the standard Pittsburgh defense that we're kind of used to. Well, it was a 52-yard interception return that put Pittsburgh on the board 13-0. And the other touchdowns that Pittsburgh got were what? One was Le'Veon Bell from a yard out.
Le'Veon Bell had two touchdowns.
One from 13 yards out. Le'Veon Bell had two touchdowns, but only 47 yards.
Yep.
An average 2.4 yards per carry. That was it. So, you know, interesting. I think in some respects you got to give a little bit to Atlanta, again, as we talked about a little bit last week, for playing Pittsburgh kind of tough in this one. You know, really, that AFC North, I think, is a crapshoot as well because, you know, like I said, Cincinnati's going to play Denver, and Denver really hasn't appeared to be all that potent offensively in the past number of weeks.
If you look at the games, you know, Cincinnati is hosting Denver in Cincinnati.
Right.
And Pittsburgh is hosting the Chiefs in Pittsburgh. So they're both hosting AFC West teams. And Denver really, they've locked up a playoff berth. They've actually locked up the division. So they're really playing for a first-round bye at this moment in time and or home field throughout if New England would lose. But for now, they're basically kind of they're kind of locked in where they are for all intended purposes. They're going to be the number two seed with a bye. So, you know, the Denver may not necessarily be playing, you know, for their lives like Cincinnati is. Cincinnati hasn't clinched anything. Pittsburgh hasn't clinched anything. They both can. There's a possible scenario this week that all three AFC North teams could possibly clinch with wins this week. In other words, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore, if they all win, could end up clinching depending on what the Chiefs and Chargers do. If the Chiefs and Chargers both lose, then all three of those teams could clinch a playoff spot, which essentially would mean the AFC has nothing left going into the week.
I was
going to
say at that point, at that point, then we know both. We would know that both wildcard teams are coming out of the AFC North.
The only thing that would keep Kansas City alive, Kansas City would have to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh, and well, that would help them because Pittsburgh would then lose. So, you know, they need to get another team, you know, at the same 6-win-loss scenario they are, and then, you know, have the tiebreaker situation sort out for them. Right now, they're on the outside looking in. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincinnati are all, you know, looking good for the moment.
Should that scenario play out this weekend, that would essentially make Week 17 completely irrelevant for the AFC, with the exception of maybe a handful of scenarios for seeding.
Correct, because Pittsburgh and Cincinnati play each other. That game would probably end up being for the North, and the Ravens would just be locked in as a wild card. New England and Denver could jostle, but the only way they're going to jostle is if New England loses and Denver wins out. In other words, if they finish tied, it's over because, you know, the Patriots beat them head-to-head. So they'd be one, Denver would be two. So, you know, New England would have to fall to the Jets or Buffalo next week, and, you know, Denver would have to win out. And, you know, they have a pretty, you know, I think, I, you know, it's hard to call Cincinnati a weak matchup. I mean, they're 9-4-1. They are another team that finds ways to win, and it's in Cincinnati. And as you had pointed out earlier, Denver has not been looking like Denver of old. So, you know, that's a tough game to pick right there.
Well, you're giving me a bit of optimism for this week that potentially an Indianapolis Colts team on the road to visit Dallas might be interested in fact, playing that Dallas Cowboys team tough to potentially wrestle away a number two seed from, say, a Denver.
Possible.
Or,
Denver would have
New
to
England.
Lose. Yeah. There would have to be other things to happen. Right now, the Indianapolis Colts have clinched the AFC South. It's done. Right. It's irrelevant what happens for them moving forward. You know, they're locked in at 3 or 4, depending how the North ends up. Because if Cincinnati would win out, you know, they have that tie, you know, looming in there, which could give them a half game advantage. It depends, like I said, like you just pointed out, it depends what Indianapolis does. If they win out, I think they cruise to the number 3 if they win out. So they have something to go for, you know. I mean, yeah, you don't get a bye, but the higher your seed is, the better your chances of playing the AFC Championship game right at home are. So you always want to, you know, get as high a possible seed as you can.
I would think, right, I would think. Yeah. Now, some here in the Philadelphia market talking about that potential matchup of the Indianapolis Colts and the Dallas Cowboys, and that game will be down in Jerry World, have said that the Colts probably won't give a damn. They've won their division, and, you know, but see, I contend that, look, they're the number 3 seed right now. You know, you don't know what could happen with New England or Denver, and Indianapolis could be sitting there with a bye week and hosting in week 2.
Well, and Chuck Pagano's already come out and said he's not resting nobody. Nobody's getting a day off. He doesn't want to upset the routine. And if you think back to Indianapolis when Peyton and Tony Dungy were there and they did the, oh, well, we're going to rest our team. They came out in the playoffs looking really bad. And
when they heard about
lost
it from their fan base, they heard about that.
I mean, you know, I like the point just to kind of dig at you that Peyton, you know, loses 75% of the time in the first round of the playoffs. Well, you know, some of that came from that strategy. I mean, let's face it, that's not – I don't think that's a good strategy. I think other teams have figured out how to do it towards the end where they'll play their starters into the – basically like the third preseason game. They'll play the starters into the third period, you know, and if they have a comfortable lead, then they might give them a quarter off. But the smart teams don't rest anybody. And Pagano doesn't seem like the type who'd be, you know, in the resting, you know, mindset ever anyway. That's just how he is. He looks like a nose to the grindstone, you know, I'm playing this out no matter what kind of coach, you know, and I don't expect them to rest. Matter of fact, you know, the way things are matching up for them, they're in a good spot to win that game. I mean, DeMarco Murray may not be playing. He just had surgery on his hand. You know, the Colts have every reason to want to play that game. You know, they don't have any reason to not want to win. You know what I mean?
Well, it's making me feel a little bit better simply because crazy thing is there is a game, Indianapolis and the Cowboys, that is going to have, could have, potentially dramatic impact on playoff situations over in the NFC. And we'll talk about that in a couple of moments.
Yeah, the whole NFC side's way, way more compelling than the AFC. The AFC's actually could get very boring at the end of this week, depending how things play out.
Yep. All right, 347-826-9964, please jump in. Give us a holler here and let us know what you're thinking on any of the games that we're bringing up, or perhaps your team, whether we bring them up or not. 347-826-9964. Or hit us up on Skype. It'll put you through to us loud and clear, or jump into the chat room. We've got that open right now, and we'll bring up your comments. Brandon, we got to get to the biggest, I guess, what was the biggest upset of the entire weekend. I got to be honest, though, just a couple of weeks ago, looking ahead on the Green Bay Packers schedule, I can't say I'm necessarily surprised that the Bills played them tough at home. Green Bay came out of this losing pretty badly, really, 21-13. Aaron Rodgers, chalk it up as just a really, really bad, bad day. 17 of 42. Are you kidding me? For 185 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions, a 34.3 QB rating. You know, just a bad day, right?
I don't know if it's a bad day or a Bills team that's kind of been scrappy all year. You know, kind of holding on for a chance to maybe make the playoffs. I mean, they're another one to fall in there in that same window as the Chiefs and Chargers. They're currently at 8-6. They need some AFC North losses somewhere. They need the Ravens or Pittsburgh or Cincinnati. And unfortunately, if it's Cincinnati, it's real tough because they have that tie. They'd have to lose two games to even give those other teams a chance. So, you know, maybe that's part of what, you know, why they played tough. You know, they're still trying to, you know, have an outside chance at making the playoffs. I mean, Buffalo, you know, I'm an AFC East guy. I'm a Patriots fan. So I tend to minimize the other teams. But Buffalo has kind of, you know, caught my attention this year. Their defense doesn't play bad. They certainly look different on offense with Kyle Orton over E.J. Manuel. I mean, they win the game. They win more games. I mean, I don't know that you're, you know, he's the quarterback of the future. I mean, I believe he's in his mid-30s already, so I don't know how much longer, you know, you can pin your hopes on Kyle Orton. But, you know, from Buffalo's standpoint, you know, they got to play tough, and maybe Green Bay kind of looked past them a little bit. Add that to Buffalo wanting to try to hang in there could end up, you know, for explaining what you see here. Now, and the other thing you got to keep in mind, Aaron Rodgers has been playing off the hook for weeks. You know, the dude was due to have a down week. I mean, everybody in the NFL has an off week once in a while. So, you know, I don't think you can – I'm not ready to write Green Bay off from this game. I think this just might have been a slight bump in the road for Green Bay. I think they're going to come back this week and show, you know, that they're a serious player in the NFC. That's for sure.
Well, we were talking about Arizona being the number one seed. And going into Sunday, you know, it was assumed Green Bay was probably the number two. Well, lo and behold, you take a look at the record right now and the standings, and the Detroit Lions technically are ahead of the Green Bay Packers with identical records. Detroit's holding the top spot because of tiebreakers. And you could be looking at Green Bay being a wild card team going in if everything were to stay exactly as it is. You would end up probably with Detroit or Dallas, depending on which one, potentially getting the number two seed. They would get the bye for the first week, and you would have either Dallas or Detroit being playing in the second week, and Green Bay would be a wild card.
I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately, because Detroit finishes the season next week in Green Bay, so they're basically going to have a, you know, all for nothing on the AFC North. You know, if it's in Green Bay, Detroit's coming there. It's going to be, that could end up being the game they flex to the, you know, to the Sunday night game for week 17, because there is no scheduled game for the Sunday night game on the last week, because they always make it a game that's going to matter for something. And that could be the game, you know, that would have the most implications, because it could have seeding, and it's definitely going to have division, implications. Barring that both teams, providing both win this week. I mean, Detroit's playing Chicago. Chicago's been pretty awful. And after, Green Bay's last week, they're going to Tampa this week. I don't think they're going to look past the Buccaneers after, losing to the Bills. So I think you're going to see that game. You're going to see two 11-5 teams or 11-4 teams playing for the division title, next week in week 17. So that's going to depend. I mean, if you look at the way things could play out, you could have you'll have three teams that could all have the same record vying for the top two seeds. Dallas wins out, either Green Bay or Detroit wins out, and Seattle wins out. In other words, Seattle beats Arizona this week. You could have, and then if Arizona wins next week, you could have four teams sitting at 10-4. Now, granted, you can't have, since Arizona is going to be a wild card no matter what, they wouldn't be vying for the seeding, but they would be, in the conversation at the same record anyway.
And don't
so
let's not rule
the
out.
The NFC is way more compelling for playoffs.
I was going to say, and let's not rule out completely. I mean, I know a lot of Philadelphia fans right here in the area might have ruled them out, but let's not rule out the Eagles.
Because
with the Indianapolis Colts having to play in Dallas, and yet we're talking about the Indianapolis Colts potentially being able to upset them, Philadelphia is going to Washington, a team that's just been in spiral mode since about week three of the entire season. You could see the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys tied at the top of the division in the NFC East with a 10-5 record. And if I'm not mistaken, if in fact it were a tie at the top, the Eagles, I think, have the tiebreaker on that one. So we're talking a lot of the other thing I wanted to bring up, because you were talking about the scrappy Buffalo Bills. Taking a look at their record right now, 8-6 they are at the current time right now. The worst they can end the season with would be an 8-8 record, which in fact would be the best record they've had since they had a winning record in 2004, 11 years ago, when they went 9-7. And that was the last time they had a winning record, was in 2004. So the very worst they could have would be a .500 record. They could potentially have a 10-6 record. So, yeah, I'd say scrappy, and you got to kind of give it a little bit, I think, to the Bills for what they've done this year.
I do, and, they go to Oakland this week. That's a very winnable game for them.
Yes, it is.
They got to play New England in New England for the last game of the season, and depending on, that game could mean an awful lot for the Patriots to have home field throughout. So I think that could be a pretty tough order if the game matters to New England for Buffalo. So I think if they're going to get that ninth win, this is the week to do it. And, Oakland's not, they barely have a pulse out there in Oakland. So I think you could pretty much pencil that ninth win in for Buffalo.
Albeit, I will say this. I think that you have seen a better playing Oakland Raiders team since, what's his name, took over for?
Tony Sparano, yeah.
Thank you.
Tony Sparano, yeah. They do
and
look
Derek
a little
Carr
better.
Derek Carr has actually starting to look like he's kind of filling into his position, feeling a bit more comfortable. The Oakland Raiders, while still probably a tremendous candidate for the number one pick in the draft, actually have, in my opinion, eye test, they've been playing better recently.
They have been, but
just to give them a little bit of love.
They're still lacking severely in talent, and I think that's the problem. That roster has been, just going downhill for years. Maybe it's because, Al Davis ran the team in very poor declining health and, left it in shambles, and they've changed coaches every other year. They need to rebuild seriously, and they really don't have many pieces in place right now. I mean, they have nobody at a skill position worth mentioning. Derek Carr's had an okay year at quarterback. They don't have a good running back. They don't have a good receiver. They have one tight end who's kind of younger and not looking too bad. But for as a whole, Oakland's just kind of lacking, all the way around. So, they need some help. That first round pick, if they could get a good deal and trade that down and get a bunch more, they'd almost do themselves some favors rather than drafting real high. They need a lot of help. And that's, it's in today's NFL, it's tough to have a really, really bad team, but they do. I mean, it just seems like, all these teams are playing on, they're a lot more parity than there used to be. I mean, but even Washington, who has, you had pointed out, they're in shambles in a down spiral. They have quite a few talented players on that
team.
They
sure do.
They got three or four receivers who are just off the hook.
Well,
Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson. They have a very talented tight end who can't seem to get his head out of his butt and get on the field in Jordan Reed. I mean, they have talent, but they have other issues where Oakland just, they're lacking at the talent.
Well, you know, you bring up that we're saying the exact same thing sitting here last night, watching through to the second half, watching the second half on forward of that Monday night game between the New Orleans Saints and the Chicago Bears. I got to tell you, that had to be without a doubt one of the worst Jay Cutler performances I have ever seen from Jay Cutler. And God knows he's given us plenty to talk about in that department. But that one, I think, had to be absolutely the worst. And, you know, we're sitting here and we're kind of discussing it a little bit. And we're sitting back and, you know, we're kind of throwing our hands in the air. And it's like, it's not for lack of weapons on the Chicago Bears, for God's sake.
No.
Jay Cutler's got so much available to him. And yet, he can come out and put on some of the most just absolutely horrible-looking games you could possibly imagine.
Well,
absolutely incredible. I think that they're a perfect example of another team that has a good deal of talent, but it seems to me that they've invested their money in all the wrong places.
Well, that, and they have an issue at head coach. I think that coach, I think I've heard the term in over his head.
Yep.
And Trestman looks like he's just paddling to keep his head above water. He's in over his head. He should not have gotten that job. You know, I think we've said it before. They should have never fired Lovie Smith. That's where the Bears screwed up. They screwed up back when they fired Lovie Smith. So, you know, now they got to deal with it. They need a better head coach. But whoever comes in there, you're right, they have a ton of talent to work with. I mean, they have two very talented receivers in Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey. Martellus Bennett is probably one of the top, you know, three or four tight ends in the NFC.
Yep.
I mean, you know, they got the talent. Their defense has been horrible, as Mike Dick has been pointing out all year. But, you know, you draft a couple, you know, invest a couple of the higher draft picks in defense, sign a free agent or two, and you can fix the defense a lot quicker than you can on the offensive side.
Good point.
You know, so, you know, that team's not that far away, you know, when it comes right down to it. I mean, Matt Forte, he's still one of the best running backs in the league, let alone the NFC. They need a better coach. Even Jay Cutler, you know, he's flighty, doesn't look good. He can, if you had the right head coach, Lovie Smith was winning with him. So it can be done.
Well, the Bears are between a rock and a hard place with him.
I know.
Because,
well, they have to keep him for
I don't
years.
See anyway. You know, there were reports out this afternoon that Cutler himself actually thinks he's out of Chicago. But that's easier for him to say than it is for the Bears to do. That is a ridiculous contract to try to move at this point. There were also multiple reports out from reliable media outlets sources just before we went to air here this evening. ESPN, CBS Sports reporting that look for Trestman to be absolutely, if not the top candidate, definitely one of the ones to be gone come Black Monday. So Trestman is probably out. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he looks at it. I'll be honest with you, he probably, you know, he's got to be feeling it, that he's not feeling, you know, that he's feeling a little overwhelmed. He's got to be, you know, looking over his shoulder. He's got to know it's coming. I mean, let's
face it. And you got to wonder if, in fact, some of the internal strife that we have heard about from this team, the Chicago Bears, this year, hasn't been a little bit, perhaps maybe more than a little bit, laid at the feet of the head coach. I mean, when all the nonsense came out about the OC this past week and the nonsense where the OC apparently went and ripped Jay Cutler anonymously, apparently in the media, and then came forward to the team afterward and said, well, I got to be honest, it was me. You know, in other outfits, I think you know this as well as yourself, Brandon, it never would have gotten to that point. That never would have happened. Could you imagine something like that happening over at the New England Patriots? That would never happen. That OC would have been gone before anything like this ever got to this point. And yet, there was no movement made on that one whatsoever. So it's got to lead you to believe that Trestman at this point recognizes that he is absolutely a lame duck. He's got no control of this team.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a shame, but you know that's kind of where they are. They have to almost have to make a move. And you know what? It's probably going to be better for the franchise. I mean, if you admit the mistake, you know, cut bait, move forward, you know, get yourself a better coach in there, a better leader of a coach who can kind of keep the reins on Cutler a little better, because like you said, they're kind of stuck with him. I don't think there's any way that, at least not for a year or two. When you sign a new contract like that, there's a lot of guaranteed money up front on these NFL deals anymore. I don't know the specifics off the top of my head, but I'm sure they can't cut him. I mean, if they did, they'd be paying him to play for somebody else.
Well, I mean, I know some teams have been talking out there right now about, you know, who might be the available QBs. And that's been, you know, one of the reports that I've seen from numerous teams just with, like, within the past 4 or 5 days. Who might be the available QBs? And you hear about RG3, and you hear about Jay Cutler's name, of all people, getting thrown into that mix. And I'm saying to myself, Jay Cutler is not going to be available because nobody's going to pick that up. It's not going to happen. So.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would agree with you there. I don't think Jay Cutler, I don't think he's viable, you know, at that money, anywhere but where he is. I mean, I just don't see any way. You know, I don't see any way another team would pick that up.
All right, real quick, let's go over, and again, I throw the number out, 347-826-9964, particularly if there are any Dallas Cowboys or Philadelphia Eagles fans out there, because we want to take a look at this one. We won't spend a lot of time on it, Brandon, because, again, as per usual, you know Jim Williams and I are going to be breaking this one down tomorrow night on our Philadelphia Eagles broadcast right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network inside the War Nest. And for all you Cowboys and Eagles fans and, well, hey, Washington Redskins fans, because that's who the Eagles will be playing this week, tune into that program, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network tomorrow evening. This game between the Eagles and the Cowboys played Sunday night, a critical game for the NFC and the NFC East. In my opinion, probably was just about the biggest stinker I've seen from the Philadelphia Eagles all year long. And we've had a couple of them ourselves over here. Boy, oh boy, I got to be honest, I'm starting to buy into the whole concept, Brandon, that this team, this coach, the makeup of this team, just can't seem to win the big games. When you take a look at the losses that the Eagles have had this season, it's to teams like Green Bay, Seattle, Dallas now. I don't understand. I mean, yeah, obviously we can go out and beat a Jacksonville just barely in the first week of the season. Just barely, I said. But we should be beating Jacksonville. Everybody should beat Jacksonville. When the Eagles have to go up against really good teams, they're just it's not coming there the way I see it. Look at the time of possession again in this game. Second week in a row, the defense for the Eagles was out on the field 42 minutes of the 18 minutes, 42 minutes versus 18 minutes for the offense. That's a ridiculous situation. You can't have that. I'm sorry, you can't have that happening. 4 turnovers by the Philadelphia Eagles, 2 interceptions and 2 fumbles lost. This was just a bad game all the way around. And I know that you have been saying for the longest time, no, let's get Nick Foles back in there. Mark Sanchez is not the quarterback that you guys want. I'm here to tell you right now, the quarterback that we want isn't on this team right now.
Well, that may very well be, but I believe Nick Foles is a better quarterback than Mark Sanchez. I think the Eagles are a better team under Foles, and I think if he does come back, I think they're going to be a stronger player in the playoffs, even if he comes back cold. I mean, they've already ruled him out for this week because he hasn't had enough healing on his collarbone.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe he comes back for week 17 against New York. Maybe he doesn't. If he does, I think that's even better for the Eagles. It, you know, get him a little game action. Even if he doesn't, the Eagles are probably going to be in the playoffs, I would imagine, either as a wild card or, you know, a 3 or 4 seed in the East if, you know, Indianapolis beats Dallas. You know, that's going to put them, you know, a couple games behind, you know, either Arizona, Seattle, Green Bay, that combination of teams. So, you know, they're going to have one more loss. So they're probably not going to be a player, you know, for a bye. However, I think if they get a home game against, you know, a weaker team, you know, they could win it, even if Foles is coming in cold.
This now, is all dependent. Your scenario there, however, is all dependent, again, I go back to this one, upon Indianapolis beating Dallas in Dallas.
Absolutely.
Because
let's just say
for a moment, both Dallas and the Eagles win this week. We close out the season on the road against the Giants. Dallas, I think, is hosting Washington. If, in fact, Indianapolis does not beat Dallas, Philadelphia may not make the playoffs at all.
Well, they may not, but you got to understand, you got to remember, you know, they're going to be in play for a wild card even if they win out either way, because they're going to have five losses. You know, Green Bay and Detroit must play again, so one of them teams is going to have five losses too. So they're going to be in the mix. You know, I think it's too far out to say exactly what the Eagles need because of their situation. I know this much. Dallas clinches the East if they beat Indianapolis and the Eagles lose. I don't think Dallas is clinching the East this week. I think the Eagles are going to beat Washington, and Indianapolis could very well beat Dallas, and that's going to change the whole makeup of the NFC East and clinch scenarios and, you know, wild card. Like, as I said a couple times already, the NFC has way more playoff implications going to play into Week 17 than the AFC. You know, I think the NFC is going to be the conference to watch Week 17. You could have as many as eight teams vying for, you know, six playoff spots. I mean, some will be in at that point. I mean, how, you know, Arizona's already one of the six, so we already know they're clinched. I think you'll see a couple more get locked in. You're just not going to know where they all fall after Week 16 for the NFC. And there's still going to be, I think there's still going to be, you know, three or four teams still playing for, you know, two playoff spots, be it division conferences, you know, with that NFC South with Atlanta and New Orleans still playing each other, be it, you know, Eagles and, say, Detroit potentially, you know, sparring for that last wild card. Dallas could be in the wild card conversation if they do lose to Indianapolis and the Eagles, you know, keep winning. So, you know, there's a whole kind of – all kind of scenarios that could still play out in the NFC side.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, I want to do this real quick. I would just want to take a one-minute break just to give my voice here a second. And what I want to do is I want to recognize a couple of our longtime friends and sponsors of us here at Frat House Sports.
Away from your computer? That's no problem. Take CLW83 Podcast with you wherever you go with the TuneIn Radio app. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store or Google Play. Then search for CLW83 to connect to the latest editions of the NAWC, Touch 'Em All, The BS Big Show, and all of your other favorite CLW83 programs. CLW83, online, on demand, and on the go with the TuneIn app for Apple and Android devices. Download it today.
Do you enjoy a completely different perspective from all other run-of-the-mill sports shows?
What in the wide, wide world of sports?
Then the Frat House Sports Show is the show for you. Join Frat House Mike and Sidekick every Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern for your weekly dose of the Frat House Sports Show. From NASCAR to hockey and everything in between, the Frat House Sports Show covers it all. Be sure to like their page on Facebook and check out their website, frathousesports.net, right here on HerbFM.com.
All righty, Fred House Mike back here with you on the Red Zone Blitz this evening, December 16th. And Brandon joining me as well as we're breaking down what happened in Week 15 of the NFL season, looking ahead to Week 16 and all of the playoff implications that that might be meaning. I kind of saved this one for the end here, Brandon. Thought we'd go in and take a look at, I guess we could say we'll make this a bit of comic relief or something. I don't know. But it did have implications for the Cincinnati Bengals nonetheless. Cincinnati Bengals shut out the Cleveland Browns this week, 30-0. They did that in Cleveland. And here was a Cleveland team that just a week ago were saying, well, hey, they're still in the playoff. Well, they're not now. As they made the decision to start Johnny Manziel. And, well, it was less than stellar. 10 of 18, 80 yards in the air. No touchdowns, two interceptions. He was sacked three times. You know, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly, the quarterback that he was playing on the other side of the ball, Andy Dalton, actually had a quarterback rating this year at one point of 4. Johnny Manziel actually did better than that. He had a quarterback rating of 27.3.
Wow.
Now, I have heard and I have read, I do try to jump around and I try to read some blog sites from, you know, other fan bases and see what people are saying. And there actually are some that are defending Johnny Manziel yet right now up in the Cleveland region and other places who are saying, well, you know, now look, back up the bus. It was only his first game. You know, are we going to crucify every quarterback that has a bad very first game? And in some respects, some have even pointed to the coaching staff saying, well, they didn't have a very good game plan going into it to begin with. I don't know. This all seemed to be just a bit of this was just a bunch of showmanship PR, wasn't it, Brandon? I mean, there was no reason. We talked about this last week. There was really no reason to insert Johnny Manziel into this game this early yet.
Well, clearly he wasn't ready, and that's probably why we haven't seen him up until this point. You know, I've heard a couple different commentaries. One that has stuck out to me most was ESPN's Merrill Hodge kind of implied that Cleveland did him a disservice by drafting him so high. He doesn't have the skill set or the talent to be a number one draft pick. He went as far as to say that he should have been drafted in the fifth or sixth round. I don't know if that's true. I mean, a lot of draft boards had Johnny a lot higher than that. But what that does is it puts undue pressure on him. He's a first round drafted quarterback, so people expect him to play sooner. He doesn't get the grace period of a second or a third round pick who can sit on the bench for a year and learn. Or, you know, we've seen other first round picks, you know, have, you know, better success. I mean, we talked about Derek Carr in Oakland. He's looked okay in his rookie season. Blake Bortles down there in Jacksonville looked okay at times. And Teddy Bridgewater for Minnesota's looked like he's got all the pieces to keep growing. So, you know, I think Manziel may have been drafted too high because of some of the hype, but he certainly didn't look ready. I mean, that team was 7-4 or 7-6 going into that game with Brian Hoyer all year leading the helm. You know, there was no reason to make the switch. They did. Now they're essentially out of the playoffs. They might as well play him the last 2 weeks, see what they got. I've heard that they could be looking for a quarterback in the draft already.
Cleveland?
Yes. That they're sold on Manziel being the future. Well, they already know they're losing Hoyer. Hoyer was signed a 1-year deal. He's going to get more money in the open market than the Browns are going to be willing to pay him. You know, they may have to draft another project. They're going to need another body. I mean, you got to have two. I mean, look up in New England. They took Garoppolo as kind of a, you know, project slash, you know, potential replacement for Brady down the road. They may end up taking another, you know, quarterback in the second or third round this year who may end up, you know, being mentioned as a replacement for Manziel before Manziel ever gets started.
Well, now I got talking a little bit about this on Frat House Saturday in my Frat House Saturday commentary a little bit. Talking about the high draft pick that Johnny Manziel had. I think he was picked, what, 23rd?
I think it was 23rd. Because it was, and Cleveland even traded up to get him because they had a higher pick than that.
Yeah, it was the Eagles' original pick.
Right.
That's whose pick they got. They got the Philadelphia Eagles pick, and I believe that was the 23rd pick. Johnny Manziel, whether you agree with it or not, and I will state outright, and I think I stated it on Saturday, I was not in agreement with it, was a Heisman Trophy winner from 2 years ago in his freshman year. For all that aren't familiar, Johnny Manziel, if he had stayed in college, would still to this day only be a junior, which is exactly what Marcus Mariota is, who just won the Heisman Trophy. Jameis Winston won the Heisman Trophy last year as a freshman. Jameis Winston is expected to come into the draft this year after just completing his sophomore year. Obviously, Brandon, there is pressure to pick quarterbacks who win the Heisman, whether it was the current year or the previous year, in the draft within the first round. I think that that is just an obvious situation. I would be surprised. Merrill Hodge, I think I would completely disagree with him. Do I think that Johnny Manziel went too high? I think the personally, yeah, I do. But you're not going to have somebody like a Johnny Manziel dropping back to a fifth round. That just wasn't going to happen. Not with the nature.
No. You know what? You can probably read those comments and say, okay, maybe second, maybe really high third. You know, should have been where he went. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo's looked better than Manziel in a little bit. We've seen him in mop-up duty in preseason. So, you know, he was taken in the second round. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's up. Maybe, as you pointed out, you know, Manziel's really is very young. He would only be completing his sophomore year in college. Maybe he's going to need an extra year or two till he's ready to, you know, be a starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, it could just be because he's so young. I don't know. I don't know what Cleveland's plans are because, you know, they look like they have a fairly decent, you know, team there. You don't have time to be waiting for a quarterback. You know, you're going to lose some of your other guys are going to get older. And, you know, the team needs to have a quarterback next year that's going to be their quarterback of the future. They don't need to wait another two till maybe Manziel's ready. They need somebody who can take the reins.
It seems that the Cleveland Browns have done the right thing by bringing a sharp guy like Mike Pettine in. I like Mike Pettine. It's not just because he's a local guy here, but I like what I've seen from him on the sideline for the most part. He's got real energy. You can see he's got passion for the game. And I just think that, you know, to bring a guy like that into your organization and then be lacking in what appears to be, again, because this is the Cleveland Browns, any kind of a long-range plan, it just blows my mind. It really does. But
yeah, I would agree. You know, I think the long-range plan was Johnny Manziel, a quarterback, but, you know, maybe they're not. You got to think Pettine's not happy with what he's seen in practice, or Manziel would have gotten a sniff earlier. That's all I'm saying. I don't know that the organization feels he's at the point where he should be to be the starting quarterback yet. Not saying they don't think he can get there, but they maybe just there's parts of his game that they or his preparation or, you know, other parts that they're just not totally happy with yet that he needs to learn and improve upon. So that may be part of it with Manziel. You know, it's a shame because Cleveland was looking like they actually, you know, at a point there, had a chance at making the playoffs this year, and it's kind of just all gone away in the last couple of weeks for them.
Let's stay with Cleveland for a second here, but also bring in this past weekend, suddenly the Carolina Panthers jumped up and became relevant again as the Panthers beat Tampa Bay 19-17 while the Atlanta Falcons were losing, and now suddenly the Carolina Panthers have come from the depths of that particular division to being in the second place position in that division right there. You know, this NFC South where nobody really, you know, where it stops, nobody knows. Where it's going to stop, nobody knows. On this round robin of dismal attempts. But interestingly enough, taking a look at the schedule for this week, the Cleveland Browns go to Carolina.
Right.
Where Carolina is a mere 4-point favorite against the Manziel-led team. So.
No. Well, here's a couple of things. Carolina is still in it for the playoffs. They have something to play for. They're at home. I don't think they've announced yet who the quarterback's going to be. I don't know if we're going to get another week of Derek Anderson or if Cam's going to be able to play. I've heard he's been practicing with the team, and the team's looking at ways to keep him safe from contact, similar to Tony Romo. I think Cam Newton's game's a little different than Tony Romo's, where Newton does seem to run a little more than, you know, Tony Romo. He kind of hovers and stays in the pocket. He'll move from side to side, but he doesn't, you know, take off running downfield like Cam does from time to time. So I don't know if that's a factor in the decision as to whether he plays or not. But, you know, I don't see Cleveland winning the game, no matter who the quarterback is for Carolina. I think Carolina has too much to lose, or too much to play for, rather, they to lose this game. Johnny Manziel, even if he plays better, I don't think they're going to play well enough to beat Carolina. Carolina still has a pretty solid defense. Not saying they're a great team, you know, but, you know, it's a lot different these last 2 weeks of the season when you still have a shot at the playoffs. And one would say, you know, Carolina's shot isn't a long shot. I mean, they could still win that division very easily because of that tie they have. It all depends on what the Saints do. I think if the Saints win out, I think they should win the division based on the fact that, you know, they have the same number of losses and New Orleans has the extra half game of a win. But has New Orleans given you any confidence at all this year that they're going to win out? I mean, they play Atlanta this week. I mean, Atlanta could be fired up thinking, oh, heck, if we beat the Saints, we're back in the hunt, you know? So,
well, even in last night's game, while New Orleans won that, I'll tell you, that was a tough, tough game, particularly in the first half, to sit and watch. I mean, it was just, ultimately, New Orleans came out and they doubled up the score on them, winning 31-15 against the Chicago Bears. But it was just Keystone Cops on both sides of the ball for the good first half of it. I mean, it was a tough, tough game to watch. And again, you know, we've talked about this Drew Brees, and I don't get it because he's having a good year. Still ranked number 3 in the entire league. So I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Well, I think
the defense
is
horrible. Defense is just horrible.
Yeah, their defense is lacking.
The Saints.
But I think some of the early Keystone Cops could be attributed to the weather. The weather was just god awful. It was pouring down rain in Chicago last night. It was a cold rain. It was a windy cold rain. You know, both teams were having issues, you know, with ball control. So you can maybe attribute some of that to that. And especially a team like New Orleans who plays in a dome, they're not used to the elements quite so much. So, you know, maybe you can attribute that. I mean, they got a tough game this week with the Falcons, division game. So, you know, they win that game, I think they're in pretty good shape. But meantime, Panthers, as we're talking about, they still have a shot. And they're certainly not going to lay down for Cleveland, that's for sure.
All right, folks, we're into a little bit of overtime talk here for you this evening. And if you want to jump in with us in a few remaining minutes that we're going to go here, we'll go a couple more minutes. I'm not quite sure how long, but a couple more minutes. Anyhow, 347-826-9964. As I pointed out, we're in a little overtime talk. We had a little rough start at the top of the show, so why not? It's the giving season, and we're giving a little bit more back to you. And let's just real quick, let me get around to a couple of different things that came up. Brandon, we were talking a little bit about this upcoming Colts-Cowboys game, and we've been kind of waiting for it to happen all season long. When was it going to be that DeMarco Murray was going to run out of time? DeMarco Murray apparently had a broken bone in his hand. From what I understand, it is his left hand. Now, I know you probably have a little better update on this than I do. I believe he had some sort of surgery on it, and the word is they have not ruled him out of the game, that if, in fact, they went with any kind of a game plan for DeMarco Murray, the thinking would be that they would numb the hand up pretty darn good just before the kickoff, and that he'd be able to use it even with the break. However, there are other outlets reporting that, well, I don't know, is that the best thing in the world to do, because that's the hand he holds the ball with? So what's the word you got on DeMarco Murray? Is this a lot of blue smoke and mirrors on the part of the Dallas Cowboys just telling us he's going to be in the lineup?
It could be. It could not be. I mean, let's face it. He's been their offense. This game matters for them.
40% of it,
They cannot lose this game and hope to be a, you know, player in the conference let alone the division. I mean, they lose the game and the Eagles win, which the Eagles should do against, and they'll know going into it because the Eagles play Saturday. So if Eagles beat Washington, they're going to know what the game means for them going into it. You know, the Eagles drop the game to Washington, there's a good chance you could see DeMarco Murray sit. They don't need it as much anymore. So, you know.
Good point.
Yeah, you know.
That's a good point. I forgot the Eagles. The Eagles are playing on Saturday. So Dallas knows going into that game what the outcome of the Eagles game is.
Absolutely. And you know what? If they know they have to win the game to keep the conference or to keep the division intact, and they could possibly be a player for the, you know, one or two seed at one point, depending how everything else shakes out, and they get that, they could get a bye week, they may just try to numb him up and see what he can do. I mean, you know, they've played horrible at home this year. They've all four of their losses have come at home. They've already lost more games than they've won at home. They were a perfect 8-0 on the road this year. They got to do something in front of their home fans. They can't put up a loss in a game against the Colts that could be for, you know, the whole season. So they're going to make every effort they can, I think, to get him on the field. Whether he can or not, I don't know. I read it was a metatarsal bone, which third or fourth one on his hand. So it's probably his ring finger or pinky or one of the bones leading up to that. So it's probably not a critical hand. I mean, look at the mechanics of your hand. Most of your grip comes from your first two fingers and your thumb. So, you know, in theory, they could tape it to the other finger, you know, or, you know, put some kind of brace on it. And he might be able to still function. Yeah, he might have to carry the ball in the other hand. But, you know, who knows? They may be able to pull it off. It may be an issue of just pain tolerance. You know, we've heard that before in the NFL. And clearly Tony Romo's getting shot up before every game. I mean, they're making no bones about it on the broadcast. You know, he comes out and
about it, yeah.
Doesn't do anything, waits till a half an hour before kickoff to get the shot because that's how long it takes for the shot to work, so in hopes that it lasts all game. So, I mean, clearly Dallas isn't afraid to, you know, to do that kind of thing. And if Murray's willing, which if you remember, we've had this conversation before about Dallas with some of their key guys. DeMarco Murray and Dez Bryant are both free agents at the end of this year. So DeMarco Murray's playing for his contract, whether it's with Dallas or another team. I think he's probably going to try to, you know, man up and give it a go because he's had a little bit of injury history in the past that I think he'd like to put behind him, you know, going into a contract negotiation. And if he somehow manages to suit up and play even, you know, mildly, you know, effectively, you know, and it helps Dallas win, that's going to go a long way for him personally, as well as the team. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. I mean, you know,
well,
thing for him? Probably not playing, but you know Jerry Jones, man, he fires from the hip. He plays loose all the time. He's not going
to
lose any sleep over suiting him up.
That's Dr. Jerry to you.
Yeah.
Dr. Jerry,
that's quarterback Jerry, whatever head he feels
Dr.
like.
Dr. Jerry, right, you know.
At that moment in time.
I want to touch just briefly before we get out of here, on the San Diego Chargers for a moment, Brandon, because the San Diego Chargers, in my opinion, had a really good shot at really looking like a good, solid team this past weekend when they hosted the Denver Broncos. They came into the Chargers came into the game at 8-5, and at that point they were two games out of the division lead. And the Broncos, as I pointed out, really in the past number of weeks haven't looked all that offensively terrific. And if you take a look at the box score points right out there. When you take a look through the first quarter, second quarter of the game, the Denver Broncos had a 9-0 lead with 2 minutes remaining in the first half, all of it on field goals, before San Diego was able to get an answering field goal, and at halftime the game was 9-3. San Diego's in this game. Ultimately, the Broncos win the game 22-10, and now the San Diego Chargers are not even being discussed, obviously as a result of their 8-6 record. They're not even being discussed for the playoffs.
Well, I think
the Chargers are a team that just are a bewilderment to me. Phillip Rivers every year comes on looking really strong, puts up good numbers, can have really, really tremendous, tremendous seasons. Even this year, ranked number 10 in the entire league. He's had better seasons than even he's had this year, but 27 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. You know, that's not shabby. He's had a 67.6 completion percentage and a 97.3 QB rating. I just don't get it with this Chargers team. It just seems they don't have just enough to get over, or they appear that they're lacking something. And one of the things that appears they're lacking sometimes to me is heart.
Well, or a running game. That's the long and short of it. If they had a decent running game, the Chargers would not have some of the problems they have. I mean, their defense plays pretty strong. They're not awful. They're not great. So, as you pointed out, Phillip Rivers is, you know, decent. Decent numbers, not horrible. But they have no running game to speak of. You know, they've had some injuries this year. But even, you know, they've got Ryan Matthews back, and he's not doing much. Danny Woodhead, in the role he played, would not have made that big of a difference for the running game. He does most of his damage out of the backfield, you know, catching the ball. So, you know, I think that's the area that San Diego needs to focus, you know, in the offseason, is getting a better running game. Whether that means new running backs or maybe even new offensive linemen that can, you know, block better, or even better blocking schemes, maybe from an offensive line coach kind of thing. I don't know. But that seems to be where this team is falling down, is on the running game, and that's what they need to look at if they want to improve. It is a shame, because you're right. There was times this season they looked like they were going to be, you know, in it to the end with Denver, you know, fighting for that in AFC West, and they're clearly they're probably the worst of the 8-6 teams based on tiebreakers. Their odds of making a playoffs are slim and none. So, yeah. You know, I think they'll be in the eliminated category after this week's play, whether they win or lose. They could win the game and they're still going to be out from everything I can. I mean, granted, it's tough to try to figure out every possible scenario with two full weeks remaining in the season. But, you know, you can kind of get an idea by looking at the schedule. I mean, you look at the standings, you know, they're the second 8-6 team in their own division, for crying out loud. The Chiefs are above them in tiebreakers.
Ahead of them. Right.
Right. And, you know, and you got Buffalo is also at 8-6. And then you got any one of the AFC North teams, if they lose, are going to fall to 9-6. You know, the way that division has been playing, and, you know, just looking at their, you know, records and tiebreaker situations, like conference records and division records, you know, San Diego's chances of making it are slim and none. They're 6-5 in the conference.
I was going to say San Diego is playing at San Francisco this weekend. And San Francisco is the Chicago version. It's the Western Chicago version of the NFC right now. They're in spiral mode. God knows what's going to happen there. I've heard Colin Kaepernick's name being brought up as a potential quarterback that could be available for a team next year, which I find highly, highly doubtful, because what you're going to want to do is bring a new coach in there and then try to reset that team a little bit. But right now, San Diego is only a 2.5-point underdog in San Francisco. Kansas City, talking about the 2-8-6s right in the Western Division, Kansas City is a 3-point underdog at Pittsburgh. I'm telling you, I like Pittsburgh in that matchup. I think the new car smell has worn off of Andy Reid out there in Kansas City. San Diego, however, I give a fighting chance to beat in San Francisco.
Yeah, but I think somehow Harbaugh is going to rally the team, and they're going to somewhat find a way to win that game. It really doesn't matter for either team. Both teams essentially, well, the 49ers are officially out of the playoffs, and San Diego might as well be. I don't think that slim chance they have is going to be enough of a factor. And I think you're going to see the 49ers probably win that game. They're going to rally around Harbaugh after all the criticism he's taken this week. I think, anyway. I could be wrong. We'll see how it plays out, because, you know, they play the second game on Saturday evening. And so, there will be no other NFL game against them. So a lot of people are going to have their eyes on that game. And, you know, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I believe this is a weird thing that the NFL is doing on Saturday, where they're doing the Thursday night football package on Saturday. So in other words, it's there, because I heard the commercial on the NFL Network the other night. It's a Thursday night Saturday game. It's a Thursday night football
confusing.
Game on Saturday is the way they're
very
promoting
confusing.
It.
I know they confuse the hell out of me all day on Sunday.
Yeah, so
I'm going, what the
we're
hell?
See, yeah, we're playing Thursday night football on Saturday.
Well,
so
that's
we'll
to make
to
up for the dog
out.
Game that they do have on Thursday.
Well,
you know
I think what it makes up for is in the Thursday package. The Thursday Thanksgiving game is traditionally NBC's game, so it doesn't go to the CBS/NFL Network package. So I think that's why they're doing the Saturday, to make up for that week. As dumb as that sounds, but, you know. And, of course, the first week of the season, NBC always starts on a Thursday with, you know, the NBC package on the first game. So maybe that's why you have two games on Saturday to fill in to make the right number for that package. So I guess it kind of makes sense. I'm okay with it, really. I mean, give me a Saturday.
Oh, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, we get a Saturday afternoon Eagles game, and then a another game to cap off the night. Yeah, and then we get all day Sunday. Sure, I'm down with that. We can watch that. We can watch more
well,
football.
Well, I remember years ago, and when I say years ago, we're talking, probably 20 years ago. There was always a couple of games on Saturday before Christmas time. Always. Because invariably, I might be there in my living room, doing some last-minute tree trimming or something, and the games would all be on. So I like the games on right before right before Christmas. The other thing, too, that it marries into, as you're going to see as we go forward, is the NFL schedule and the NCAA bowl schedule all kind of weave together as well. And you'll see that there aren't as many this coming Saturday. Believe it or not, there are already bowl games kicking up on Saturday, but not as many as there have been in the past because of the lack of relevance that has now been given to bowls like the Fiesta Bowl and others, because now there's only one, two, three games, really. There's only three games that really matter. One of them will be the Rose Bowl, and one of them, I think, is the Sugar Bowl. But there are other of the bowls that were really, really, that had a little more import. They've now been relegated to being less important, and so what they're doing is they're spreading them out. So there's not near as many bowl games on certain days. While they're spread out more, you're going to see as we go forward how they're all kind of tucked in and married in together. I'll give you one more example of what I'm talking about. In week 17, there will be no Sunday night. There is no Sunday night. I'm almost positive.
No, there is.
Do we know what it is?
No, they will flex
after
week's play. They will flex a game. They don't ever schedule one. They will flex whatever game has the most playoff relevance to Sunday night.
Well,
so that's
because
all
at this
you'll
point
get
right
one.
Now, there is
Saturday.
There's an NCAA bowl game planned for that night.
There will be an NFL game, too. It'll probably be just, I'm guessing off the cuff, probably going to be either Bengals-Pittsburgh, because that game could be for the AFC North, or Detroit-Packers, because that game could be for the NFC North. One of those two games will probably end up being your flex game. That's just, my guess. And who knows? We have to see how things play out here. But I think those are going to be your two most important games. You could end up in a scenario where, it's a win, you win, you lose, you go home, but depending on wild cards in the NFC between, the Lions and Packers, or maybe even with the Steelers and Bengals. I don't know. We'll have to see how the other games play out. But that they will flex a game. There will be a Sunday night game next week.
All right.
In week 17, they always do that. They always pick a game that'll have some relevance, where whoever wins gets in or decides something. They will pick a game, and it will be on Sunday night. There will be one, but there is no more Saturday or Thursday after this week. We have
after
our last
week,
Thursday
right.
night game right. and the two Saturday, and then it's
next,
all
well, next Thursday is
Sunday.
Christmas. Yeah,
yep.
Next Thursday is Christmas, and the week after, and the Thursday after that is New Year's. So.
They wouldn't have had one anyway, because they don't want any teams having an advantage prior to going into the playoffs. They don't want anybody, who would have a Thursday game to get 11 days off going into a playoff game. That's why they kind of always do the Sunday deal on the last week of the season. There's no Monday night games either because they don't want to put a Monday night team at a disadvantage having one less day to prepare. They don't want to give any of that. They don't want any of that garbage out there for the playoffs. That's why you won't see it on the last week. Everything's on Sunday. It's been that way for the last several years, and that's why. The NFL has actually come out and said it. They don't want to have any teams on different rests heading into the playoffs.
All right, a little bit of overtime chat we brought to you there. Did we cover it all, Brennan? Did we miss
so.
Anything? Was there anything else we wanted to get into?
We could probably go another hour on potential
playoff
scenarios.
Oh, well, we sure could. I know we could, but
I don't. Yeah, we could save that for next week. I think we hit on the important games. I mean, the big games this week to watch are all the AFC North games. And, you know, I guess you could kind of pay attention to the NFC South, you know, because that's going to, you know, that stuff's going to set itself up for, you know, the final week, at least this week. Next week, you know, as I pointed out, there's two games that are, well, I'm pretty sure the Detroit-Green Bay game is going to matter because it looks like both Detroit and Green Bay have winnable games this week. So I think you're going to see, you know, them head into the final week, you know, at 11-4 records playing for that, you know, that division. So it's going to be some good football. I mean, the Lions should be able to beat the Bears, and Green Bay has the Buccaneers. So I think that game's going to stick in there with relevance. The, you know, the AFC North, you know, finale with Pittsburgh and Cincinnati could be a big game as well. So those are ones to watch for next week.
You got it. And we'll be coming back probably talking about a good number of those. We'll be talking about them, though, even over the course of the next couple of days right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. What do I mean? Well, hey, tomorrow night, you're going to want to be tuning in because we're going to be talking NFC East. We're going to be talking Eagles-Dallas from last week. We're going to be talking Eagles-Redskins coming up for this week on Saturday, as we just pointed out. And that's going to actually be a big, big game with the, as we just pointed out, Dallas going into their game against Indianapolis is going to know whether the Eagles won or not. And if the Eagles won, that's going to put a little more pressure on them. Jim Williams and myself will be coming to you here tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Be here. You want to listen to that one, check out, and give us a call here on Inside the War Nest, our All Philadelphia Eagles program. Thursday night, we will be back here with you 1 week before Christmas for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. And that will be our 171st coming to you here on Thursday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll have the whole Frat House gang all together with us. We'll see what we can do. Maybe we can even get a guest shout out there from our own sidekick, if we can, from St. Louis. But 7 p.m. for the Frat House Sports Show. And you can bet we'll be talking a lot of football again on Thursday night. As well, for the past couple of weeks, everything's been football-centric, as well it should be, here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. And you can bet I'll be back here on Saturday probably even talking a little college ball stuff. So we'll be even sticking around with the football chat a little bit more in the college bowls. Brandon, thank you for joining me again this weekend for, dealing with the front end mess that we had there and pitching in from the front seat. You had the front seat. You had the driver's seat on that one. That was very good.
Well, last minute too, so I'm sure it wasn't the smoothest, so, but that's all right.
And thank you all out there for listening in to us again this evening on the Red Zone Blitz. Make sure you tell your friends and your family and get them to follow us here on Blog Talk Radio, and also get over to Facebook, Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between and look for our little purple icon. And please make sure you're tuning in with us again tomorrow evening for Inside the War Nest at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, we'll catch you real soon. Thanks again.